This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Syria. The failed state of Syria. To the north, the Turkish army. To the south, the Israeli army. To the west, a contingent of Russians who aren't leaving because they want to hold on to that port. And to the east, the U.S. has deployed troops in support of our Kurdish allies battling ISIS. However, I welcome two gentlemen writing about this matter because there's news. Cameron McMillan, an Iraq veteran of Operation Inherent Resolve, research analyst at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Center on Military and Political Power. Bradley Bowman is the senior director of SAME. Gentlemen, good evening to you. Right now, I want to establish what the U.S. deployment looks like in Syria. I recall some years past, there was an attack on the U.S. deployment in Syria that led to a retaliation, and the retaliation was a decap on Kataib Hezbollah commander in Baghdad. And that seemed to answer no more attacks on American personnel. But now we have a situation where a decision has been made by CENTCOM and by the Defense Department and the Trump administration to withdraw or partially withdraw the U.S. deployment in Syria. I start with you, Brad. What is the mission? Why have we been in eastern Syria, given the failed state and the civil war? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. And I know you're a student of history like I am, and some quick history is in order here. I'd say let's remember that in 2011, the White House decided to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq against the advice of commanders and ignoring conditions on the ground. And then that 2011 withdrawal catalyzed a series of events that led to the rise of the ISIS caliphate and the forced return of the United States to deal with the terrorist organization that was one of the biggest and worst we've seen in recent memory. So that's the history here. The primary purpose of the U.S. military posture, the explicit purpose of the U.S. military posture in Syria, is to keep the ISIS caliphate defeated, to keep it from returning. Here's the bottom line reality. The caliphate is defeated, and that is good, but the terrorist organization, and certainly not its ideology, are not defeated. And if we don't keep significant pressure on the terrorist organization, we will see a resurgence and potentially a return of a caliphate, forcing us to return later at a higher cost, delivering a body blow to efforts to focus on China and the Indo-Pacific.
Cameron, a very good evening to you. What is there now? You've briefed me quickly about 900 to 2,000 to under 1,000. Where are they deployed exactly? Good evening to you, Cameron.
Good evening to you as well, and thanks for having me. Yeah, so we've had, before the October 7th terrorist attacks on Israel, there were roughly 900 U.S. troops in Syria. They are on a collection of bases or smaller outposts, primarily in the country's northeast, with an additional base closer to the Jordanian border called Al-Tanf. That force level was heightened following the October 7th terrorist attack on Israel and the subsequent wave of attacks on U.S. forces, both in Iraq and Syria, to around 2,000. And we had an announcement from the Department of Defense that level would be brought down to below 1,000, quote, in the coming months. And in addition to reducing troops, we're reducing bases as well, including two significant bases that are called Mission Support Sites, Green Village and Euphrates, that are really central to providing support for the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces, which are our primary partner in combating ISIS, like Brad talked about, in those parts of Syria where they've been able to stay alive and are attempting to reconstitute.
What is the nature of the deployment? Is it combat troops? Is it technicians? Are they watching them with drones? Do we know, Cameron?
Yeah, it's definitely a mix of counterterrorism-focused forces whose primary mission is to support local partners, whether that be in Iraq or Syria. In Syria, it is to support the Syrian Democratic Forces. That is through the use of special forces and what we'd call enablers, basically things that our local partners don't have, like you mentioned, drones, air support, communications, logistics, things of that nature. And then as well, in order to support those U.S. troops that are supporting the local partners, we need to make sure that they have the protection that they need that can include infantry to secure the bases and conduct patrols to make sure that they're getting the food and the water and the supply lines that they need, and air defense to protect against drones and rockets and missiles. So it's really a deployment of an assortment of forces to support the primary counterterrorism force that is supporting the local partners. So the line you hear from DOD a lot is train, advise, and assist. And that's basically what it is: to train, to advise, and assist local partners who are bearing the primary burden of fighting ISIS directly, as well as support and force protection troops to support that mission.
Brad, the New York Times headline on this matter is U.S. is withdrawing hundreds of troops from Syria, subhead: the end of the Assad era has reduced some threats, but the Islamic State has shown renewed strength in the country. Therefore, pointing out to the fact that there is no government that is recognized in Syria. So I'm presuming the question, whose permission do we have to deploy American combat troops and their support elements? We have no one's permission, right? We just took it upon ourselves to watch ISIS. Nobody deputized us. Nobody's supervising us. This is not a NATO operation. This is U.S. decision-making. Is that correct, Brad?
Yeah, that's essentially correct, John. And that's an interesting distinction here that has been in play for a long time. The situation, you know, we in the West, dare I say, you know, we focus on borders, but terrorist groups, you know, Al-Qaeda in Iraq and then later ISIS, they don't give a darn about the border between Syria and Iraq. So they were moving back and forth between those two countries at will, using one position to support the other. And that's relevant to what Cam was saying earlier about not only are we reducing the number of troops by apparently more than half, but we're consolidating the number of bases, as he discussed. And a lot of those bases being consolidated are right there on that border. And so we're in Iraq with the permission of the government of Iraq. We are in Syria. We were in Syria. We went to Syria despite having no approval from the then Assad regime to do so. And the attitude was, this is a terrorist organization that is committing terrorist attacks and inspiring terrorist attacks around the world. And we're going to go and address this threat. This is one, you know, this is basically Al-Qaeda controlling territory. And when terrorists control territory, they generate revenue, they gain credibility, they radicalize people, they inspire people, and they grow and become more powerful. And that's why territorial control for terrorists is a particularly bad thing. So, yes, our troops are in Iraq with the permission of the government of Baghdad. We've been in Syria for many years. We returned, as I said, in 2014 because we had to. And we went into Syria and didn't bother trying to get the Assad regime because, we know the Assad regime was working closely with the Russians and the Iranians. And they were leaning on the Assad regime hard to oppose our presence there. But thankfully, we had the power to do what was necessary to protect our interests. And we didn't request a permission slip from an egregious despot, Bashar al-Assad.
Cameron, over the decades, I've been reporting the war. I've learned one big lesson: ungoverned spaces are perilous to civilization. That was Somalia, Al-Qaeda. That was the Arabian Peninsula, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and other AQAP. Right now, Syria is an ungoverned space, to my knowledge. And CENTCOM knows this. The intelligence community knows this. Your article with Brad makes it very clear that leaving Syria creates an ungoverned space. Is it the collective opinion, that ISIS will regenerate in that space, Cameron?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think not just ungoverned spaces, generally, this specific ungoverned space, as Brad brought us through the history, we've seen this before. And what you've seen leaders like General Clarilla, the commander of CENTCOM, and the U.S. intelligence communities, this year's worldwide threat assessment, basically been warning that U.S. troops aren't there to govern Syria, but they are there to keep the pressure on ISIS and make sure they don't resurge. And they have been very consistent in their warnings that ISIS has, over the past couple of years, not only last year, increased its attacks significantly, but is attempting to reconstitute. And that a premature withdrawal of U.S. forces that ignores, like Brad said, the advice of military commanders and intelligence professionals and conditions on the ground risks that resurgence and risks playing back what Brad described as a really horrific period of history in that part of the Middle East, but not just the Middle East, of external attacks outside of the Middle East by ISIS and ISIS-inspired terrorists. And one additional variable that we have to deal with here is that our local partners that we were talking about, the Syrian Democratic Forces or SDF, also guard prison camps in these parts of Syria that hold thousands of ISIS prisoners and tens of thousands of displaced persons who have connections to ISIS. And if the SDF loses its U.S. support, if it becomes harassed by the new regime in Damascus or by Turkish-backed or Turkey themselves forces, then they will not be able to hold those prisons. And that is, in the words of CENTCOM, quote, the potential next generation of ISIS. And so allowing ISIS to basically have that instability and to have not only the instability, but basically alleviate the pressure that's on it is going to, I fear, and Brad and I argue in the article, we have cause for concern to allow the resurgence of this terrorist organization to regain territory.
I'm speaking to Cameron McMillan and Bradley Bowman of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. There's the problem, recognized broadly, widely, by CENTCOM, by the DOD. What is to be done when we come back?
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.